You are listening to We Saw the Devil, an investigative and conversational true crime podcast that deep dives into fascinating criminal cases that are solved, unsolved, or ongoing. From America's Lori Vallow to Germany's Armin Mivas, we examine and discuss the world's most shocking cases. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to follow us online. Check us out at WeSawTheDevil.com and WeSawTheDevil on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, you can become part of the show by backing us on Patreon. Hello, everyone. You are listening to We Saw the Devil. This is Robin, and I am here today with a twofer episode. Unless you have been living under a rock for the last 24 hours, if you have followed the Lori Vallow case in any capacity, you have likely seen the news. Cause to celebrate, we have been waiting on this for 9 months. Lori Vallow's competency has been restored. She is now fit to resume the process, the procedure, and we are now headed to trial, guys, most likely. We're going to get into that. We're going to discuss it. But first, I have another case that I just have to put on your radar. We just have to discuss this, or I couldn't live with myself, frankly. Before we get into either of those things, let's just get our quick housekeeping out of the way. You are listening to We Saw the Devil. I'm your host, Robin. You can find our website at WeSawTheDevil.com. From there, you can find us across all social media platforms, as well as our Patreon, where for as little as $3 a month, you can become part of the team, part of the show. Super excited. We also have, if you are an executive producer, $25 or above, you get a t-shirt. And then you also have the ability to come on the show. I actually, 2 nights ago, recorded with patron Alana, who is a pathology assistant. And we talk about all the gory, squishy, crazy things that she has encountered during her career, as well as cover the case of Dean Coral, which I am super, super, super excited about. That's a case I've been fascinated by, but knew relatively little about. So Alana, being from Texas, picked a Texas case, had an absolute blast with her, and that is actually going to be the episode on the second half of this week. But before we get into the Lori Vallow portion of the episode, guys, I quickly want to bring before you a case that recently fell on my radar and sincerely made me sick to my stomach. I got so simultaneously angry and devastated that I shit you not, I thought I was going to have a cardiac event. I mean, I'm only kind of even kidding with that. And then being me, I had to go down the full rabbit hole, and I have spent the last 2 weeks reading absolutely every piece of material that I can find on this case, every single document that I can. Now, you'll be seeing this name in the news a lot over the upcoming weeks. And if you aren't already familiar, say via Joe Rogan, Kim Kardashian, or others, please allow me to bridge this gap for you. Back in 2008, Melissa Lucio, a mother of 12 children who was pregnant at the time with twins, was convicted of the murder of her 2-year-old daughter, Mariah. Now, here we are, 15 years later. Melissa is 53 years old, has remained on death row since 2008, and she is scheduled to be executed by lethal injection on April 27th, just 2 weeks from tomorrow. If this takes place, she will be the first Latina woman to ever be executed in the state of Texas. What exactly happened to bring us to this point? Because I don't know about you guys, but I'm pretty much over society. You know, everything from politics to the Will Smith slap, to everything else that is ripping our country apart. We have the Democrats and the progressives on one side. You have the Republicans and conservatives on the other side. Everyone is bitching and moaning at each other and screaming, and no one wants to come together to figure anything out, it seems. This case and Ukraine, I think, are two of the biggest examples that I'm seeing recently where political affiliation be damned. Something's right and something's wrong. So what happened to bring us to where we are now? On February 17th of 2007, paramedics were called to the home of Melissa and Robert Alvarez. They claimed that Mariah, their 2-year-old daughter, had gone to sleep and not woken up. She was completely unresponsive and not breathing. She did not have a pulse. Paramedics arrived and attempted resuscitation. Now, Robert Alvarez told paramedics that Mariah had fallen down the stairs as they had just moved into the apartment 2 days prior. Mariah was transported to the emergency room at Valley Baptist Medical Center in Harlingen, Texas, and pronounced dead just 2 hours after that original call to 911. Melissa and Robert Alvarez were immediately taken to the police station for interrogation. Just hours after Mariah's death, Melissa Lucio was interrogated by police for more than 5 whole hours. Her lawyers would later go on to say that at this time, she was grieving the death of her daughter, pregnant with twins. It was past 3 a.m. in the morning. And not only that, but Melissa Lucio herself was also a victim of physical abuse, sexual abuse, and trauma throughout her entire life. During those 5 hours of the interrogation, Melissa Lucio said that she did not cause the death of her daughter and asserted her innocence more than 100 times. At 3 a.m., Melissa uttered the words, quote, "I guess I did it. I guess I did it." She then admitted to physically abusing her daughter to the point of death, potentially at least causing her death from injury. The case eventually went to trial in 2008, and Melissa Lucio was found guilty of capital murder and sentenced to death. Her husband, Robert Alvarez, also Mariah's father, was sentenced to 4 years in prison for child endangerment. Now here we are, it's 2022, 15 years later, Melissa's 53 years old, and she's scheduled to die by lethal injection 2 weeks from tomorrow on April 27th. But major, major plot twist. Half of the nation has come alive against this execution. More than 83 state representatives from Texas signed a letter urging Texas Governor Greg Abbott and the Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles to grant her clemency or even a reprieve. Democrats and Republicans. Not only that, but multiple jurors who convicted her are crying out for a reprieve or clemency, saying that they would never have convicted her if they had the evidence that they have now. There's also a petition circulating created by the Innocence Project called Stop the Execution of Melissa Lucio in Texas. This petition has garnered more than 198,000 signatures at the time of this recording. Republican State Representative Jeff Leach of Plano, Texas said, quote, "She was convicted based on discredited forensics and the testimony of a medical examiner who didn't follow protocol and put another innocent person in prison just 2 months after Melissa." For those of you who don't know, Jeff Leach is also a co-chairman of the Criminal Justice Reform Caucus. Democratic Representative Carl Sherman said, quote, "It's important that our names be added to this, and hopefully we can stop this injustice." It's also made it to the small screen. Hulu also recently released a documentary on the case called The State of Texas versus Melissa. And this past weekend, a juror from the original trial, juror Johnny Galvin Jr., wrote an op-ed in the Houston Chronicle this last Sunday saying that he felt, quote, peer pressured to give her the death penalty. And now he's also crying for a new trial. He's pretty much said he couldn't live with himself based on the new evidence that has surfaced and being responsible more, you know, partially for sending a woman to death, to lethal injection. But back to Jeff Leach. Jeff Leach, on March 24th, during a news conference, said the following, quote, "The system literally failed Melissa Lucio at every single turn. As a conservative Republican myself, who has been long a supporter of the death penalty in most heinous cases, I have never seen a more troubling case." So what changed? Why all of this 15 years later? Three words, in short, the Innocence Project. The Innocence Project is a nonprofit agency that works to exonerate wrongly convicted people using DNA, amongst other methods. Well, they joined Lucio's legal team back in January when the execution was scheduled. Since then, they have been hard at work and unearthed, guys, some pretty fucked up shit in this case. But we're going to go through a couple of those pieces. First, let's talk about the day of Mariah's death. The day that Mariah Lucio was found unresponsive on that apartment floor. When paramedics arrived, Robert told them that Mariah had fallen down the stairs a couple days before. But here's the thing. He was referring to their previous apartment. Their previous apartment had a 14-step staircase leading to their front door. The new place was only just a couple steps. The paramedic attending to Mariah was like, something doesn't seem right, because he thought that they meant that apartment with the three steps. So when the police arrived, the paramedic was like, dude, her father just said that this happened, this trauma happened, like, because Mariah was covered in bruises, covered. And so when the police arrived, the paramedic was like, so her dad said she fell down these three stairs and that's what caused all of the bruising, which obviously didn't make sense. He also told police that Melissa, quote, didn't act at all like what he would expect of a mother. And then the police agreed, noting that Melissa Lucio did not appear to be grieving as she should, as another mother in that place should. For the 5 hours of her interrogation, police showed Melissa Lucio photos of Mariah, her 2-year-old daughter, deceased in the hospital bed. They yelled at her, they berated her, they intimidated her. They even said that she may not get into trouble at all if she just admitted that she had accidentally killed Mariah while spanking or beating her. But it's okay because she must have been, quote, frustrated. In fact, how about we listen to some clips from this interrogation now?
First of all, I'm very sad that this child died. But when I first saw you in there, I knew something was wrong. You know something is wrong.
No, sir, I don't.
You know something is wrong.
No, sir, I don't.
If I bring you all those pictures, if I beat you half to death like that little child was beat, I bet you you'd die too.
So I did not beat my daughter, sir.
No?
Not that cruel to my children.
What are all those bruises on your little child?
This is your chance to set it straight. Because right now it looks like capital murder. Right now it looks like you're a cold-blooded killer. Now, are you a cold-blooded killer?
No, I'm not.
Or were you a frustrated mother who just took it out on her?
We knew somebody did it. We're trying to find out who did it. If it wasn't you, I don't think somebody crept in there at the middle of the night and went up to your child and specifically singled her out so he could bite her on the back.
Listen, it happens. Okay? We all make mistakes. We all make mistakes. We all get upset. We already know what happened. We already know what happened.
Now, the following is a direct excerpt from the Death Penalty News Information Center about this case. Quote, the prosecution characterized Lucio's interrogation as evidence that she had abused her daughter and therefore must have killed her. Lucio's lawyers sought to present testimony from a psychologist to explain the coercive effect of police interrogation on Lucio, whom Dr. John Pinkerman described as a, quote, battered woman who takes blame for everything that goes on in the family. The trial court barred Dr. Pinkerman from testifying, asserting that his testimony was irrelevant because Lucio had, quote, denied ever having anything to do with the killing of the child. And the theme of coercion is a popular one. This is directly from the Innocence Project itself regarding Melissa Lucio. Born in Lubbock, Texas, to a Catholic Mexican-American family living well below the poverty line, Melissa Lucio's earliest memories are of her mother struggling to escape the blows of her partner. Older relatives began to sexually assault and abuse Melissa from the time she was 6 years old. As a child, she was repeatedly sexually abused and became a child bride at the age of 16 with the hopes of escaping her abusive home environment. Unfortunately, her life did not get easier. At the time of Mariah's accident, Melissa had 12 children between the ages of 2 and 15 and was pregnant with twins that she would ultimately give birth to in prison and have to give up for adoption. She struggled at times to provide for her family, but was a caring mother who did her best given her incredibly difficult circumstance. Now we're going to pause right there. As much as I would love this to be just a complete cut and dry case of, well, the police were shady and it was corrupt and, you know, a Russ Faria type of situation, Melissa Lucio was not a saint. And this is actually potentially why it was in the state that it was. And the documentary on Hulu actually does a great job portraying the truth of this. Because it actually includes all the details about Melissa's cocaine addiction. Some of her kids were temporarily taken away from her by Child Protective Services, by CPS. I mean, CPS came because the kids were homeless, neglected. They relied on school for food, showers, basic hygiene, brushing teeth. And then when they did have a home, when Melissa and her whatever husband at the time, you know, were able to provide a home, neighbors complained that their house would reek of marijuana smoke. Melissa says, because she's interviewed directly in this documentary, that they temporarily lost custody of a handful of their children when she and her ex-husband, Guadalupe Lucio, who was the father of the 5 oldest, were in basically the throes of cocaine addiction. Melissa was frequently beaten by Guadalupe. He was apparently overall a wonderful human being, clearly. While Melissa eventually got clear from her cocaine addiction, she kind of started to turn her life around. She got clean. She started doing better. And then she married Robert Alvarez, who, like so many victims of domestic violence and trauma do, continue the cycle. And that's what happened. He beat her frequently. And then Mariah died. And a note during this time period. In the documentary on Hulu, it does interview most of her children as well as other family members. People are in fact torn as to her innocence. Again, her character is not on trial here. What is on trial is whether she beat or injured her daughter to the point of causing her death. One thing, just as a complete side note, is that her daughter, Alexandra, has been accused by multiple siblings. They witnessed her beat, strike, take her head, slam it on the ground, take her head, slam it on a table, punch her in the face. Other siblings have actually witnessed Alexandra assault Mariah, but every single sibling says that they never witnessed their mother be violent with Mariah other than a light pinching when she would act up, which obviously not socially acceptable at this time, but it's a light pinching is very much different than punching a two-year-old in the face and causing it to collapse. Moving on to physical evidence, though. When Mariah's body was sent in for an autopsy, it has now been discovered that law enforcement officers told the Cameron County medical examiner that the case had already been solved and her mother had killed her, that she'd confessed. Can you freaking imagine? Just, hey, don't worry about it. She's confessed. We're all good here. Don't worry. There's no bias whatsoever, right? Like, a medical examiner wouldn't go into that examination looking for evidence to support what they had just been told by police. Is that outside the realm of possibility? Not only that, but there were two law enforcement officers in the medical examiner's office present at the autopsy as it was being performed. The result of the autopsy determined that Mariah's death was a homicide. It did not take into account Mariah's medical history, and perhaps most importantly, one very public and very well-documented instance where she fell at her preschool and then actually lost consciousness. And this particular fall also led to a variety of issues, such as difficulty walking and occasional trouble breathing. Now, the medical examiner also testified that Mariah's injuries had to have occurred within 24 hours of her death, so there's no way that they could have been caused by a fall 2 days earlier. And that piece right there, that has been debunked by so many people, as well as basic science that we know. As everyone knows, people can get a concussion 3-4 days before and still have difficulties, if not death, 2 days later. That is a very well-accepted thing in the medical community, but not according to this medical examiner. But then there's the big bone of contention. And this is what separates the hashtag justice for Mariah and hashtag justice for Melissa Lucio camps, the bite marks. The medical examiner testified that Mariah's death could not have been the result of an accidental fall because she had, quote, obvious bite marks on her back. Both during her testimony, as well as in the autopsy report, the Cameron County medical examiner described how the bite marks were formed, quote, with raking, where it just pulls flesh off the back. But here's the thing. Bite mark analysis has been almost entirely debunked. It's been almost entirely discredited as a forensic analysis method and field. Human skin is an incredible thing. It's elastic. It swells. It heals. It deforms. It warms. It cools. Bite mark analysis has been so unreliable that just since the year 2000, in the last 21 years on record, 30 people have been exonerated after being convicted almost solely, or at least primarily, based on bite mark evidence. To today, not a single court in this country has ruled bite mark evidence as inadmissible in court, but almost everyone agrees that it's junk science, that it doesn't belong. And isn't that terrifying? We still frequently see these, quote, experts out in court giving their expert testimony about how these bite marks, indentations, like correctly line up to this particular suspect. The more that science advances, the more that it's telling us that that's bullshit. In case you're wondering how the Attorney General's Office of Texas is doing on this case, well, the Texas Attorney General's Office maintains that evidence shows that Mariah suffered, quote, the absolute worst case of child abuse the emergency room doctor had seen in 30 years. Quote, Melissa Lucio still advances no evidence that is reliable and supportive of her acquittal. But then her defense. The defense counsel assigned to Melissa Lucio did her no favors whatsoever. In fact, they called no pathologists and no experts to the stand. Not a single one. I mean, she barely had a defense, even if you could call it that. And here's some really, and quite possibly, I mean, this is heinous. Armando Villalobos was the Cameron County District Attorney who tried this case. And the trial came in 2008, just as the Cameron County election was heating up, and he wanted to appear tough on crime. So he unseated the incumbent DA, promising he was going to restore leadership and ethics and whatnot. Since then, he has been accused and convicted of corruption and bribery following a highly irregular plea deal with a man who'd murdered a woman on South Padre Island. He actually allowed the defendant 60 days to get his affairs in order and allowed him to flee the country. In 2014, he was convicted of bribery and extortion for accepting more than $100,000 to illegally tamper with multiple cases that happened before Mariah's death. He was then sentenced to 13 years in federal prison. If Villalobos was busted for bribery in several other cases, how many other cases did he tamper with where he wasn't caught? That absolutely has to be a question in this. And then not only that, we have Melissa Lucio's attorney himself, Peter Gilman. Peter Gilman was a defense attorney who was not death penalty qualified in any capacity, and he actually previously ran for the DA's office. He wanted to be the district attorney himself, but he lost, and he was actually appointed to the case despite never having handled a death penalty case whatsoever. Not only that, but he came in before reading any evidence, before even really talking to her, and said, you should just plead guilty in exchange for 30 years. And Melissa Lucio said, no, I wasn't guilty, so I denied that. And guess where Peter Gilman works now? The Cameron County DA's office. In 2019, a three-judge panel in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals found that the trial court violated Melissa Lucio's right to present a complete defense by not allowing the testimony of two witnesses. And then you know what happened right after that? Prosecutors successfully appealed, got the court to reinstate her conviction last year in 2021. And then what did they do? They immediately set an execution date of April 27th, 2 weeks from tomorrow. I implore all of you, if you are interested in this case, to read the fine details, to research this case, sign the petition if you are interested, but this is absolutely making me sick. And unless Governor Greg Abbott, who not a really good, you know, track record in the empathy department, especially in Texas with the death row and you know all of these additional factors, are we going to see a potentially innocent woman put to death by lethal injection for a murder that she did not commit? And this has happened so many times throughout history, guys, of people wrongfully accused people being put to death. But with the advent, you know, in the modern age with social media and all of that, we're getting around the clock updates on things that happen. The more hell that you can give Texas right now, the better. Even if just life in prison. There are simply too many questions and there's too much doubt in this case at this point for this woman to be put to death. It shouldn't matter someone's race, socioeconomic status, any of that. They should have access to a good defense and a fair trial. And a Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals found that she was not allowed a complete defense. And with all of this new evidence and you know people getting arrested and so on and so forth, blatantly lying too, based on actual science, this needs to stop. Not to mention the fact that multiple of her own children who were in the home the day of the fall said that she didn't abuse their sister, that it was in fact an accident that they witnessed with their own eyes. And that at no point in multiple CPS investigations did CPS find any evidence of physical abuse whatsoever in that household with the children. Thousands of pages. All right, moving on to far happier topics, depending, I guess, on how you're viewing this. Lori Vallow's competency was restored. We knew eventually that we would get here one day, guys. We didn't know when. And hallelujah, the time is here. That means things are going to start moving again, which is going to be incredibly interesting. The reason that I haven't done a Lori Vallow update in quite a while is that it was just a bunch of, you know, hearings, more or less, random hearings that I just didn't really find necessary for a standalone episode. It didn't interest me that much, and it didn't really make a huge, huge, huge bit of difference at the end of the day. But now we have some large movement in the case, and things are going to be happening pretty quickly. And don't forget, we have the trial coming up in January. But let's talk about all of these things and break it all down. Alrighty, guys. So Judge Stephen Boyce ruled that she is competent to stand trial. So let's go ahead and start with that ruling. It reads, based upon the court's determination that defendant Lori Noreen Vallow, aka Lori Noreen Vallow Daybell, is restored to competency and is fit to proceed, the court orders that the defendant be brought before this court to be arraigned. Further, the order staying the case is hereby lifted. Defendant is to be transferred from the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare and remanded to the custody of Fremont County Sheriff to be transported and brought before this court. The arraignment shall take place on April 19th, 2022 at 1 p.m. at the Fremont Courthouse, Fremont County, Idaho. It is so ordered. Dated this 11th day of April 2022. When Justin Lum posted that, and I saw Nate Eaton of East Idaho News post that as well, I squeed. Could not believe it. I mean, don't you love the little gifts in life that just pop out of nowhere that are the most least expected? Well, just to recap, Lori Vallow is finally going to be released from a state mental health facility after a 9-month stay. And she's going to be brought back to Fremont County. She's going to be checked in into the female population, put back into her cell, and the show is getting back on the road. Now, she was found incompetent. And just to kind of go over that again, a person is mentally incompetent to stand trial if he or she is unable to understand the character and consequences of the proceedings against him or her, or is unable to properly assist in his or her defense. Now, we never exactly got the reasoning behind this. We never understood, never told, behind the curtain proceedings that we were not privy to. So we do not know exactly why Judge Boyce felt that way and then also extended it. He extended it multiple times. Lori Vallow went into the mental health facility last summer in June, and we don't know when she's going to be released. That's not exactly going to be televised information, considering that she is one of the most hated women in this entire country. So let's kind of go over the state of the case. You know, Lori's coming back. Mark Means is gone. If you recall, he was removed from the case by the judge because way back in the day when this entire shit show kicked off, he actually represented both Chad and Lori. Because they conspired together to commit the crimes, that's a pretty distinct conflict of interests and a potential ethics issue. So Jim Archibald is now her attorney. You know, Mark Means loved the spotlight. He kind of took up all the spotlight with Jim Archibald kind of sitting there quietly for the most part. But he is now her primary attorney. He is an absolute rock star. He has an immense amount of experience with the death penalty. He's death penalty certified. He's the big leagues. We made fun of Mark Means for so long because of his ineptitude. He had no idea what was going on. It's like he could not take social cues. Remember when he was accused of working with a YouTuber to help like edit his filings and stuff? He's an interesting character. But Jim Archibald is a much better attorney as a whole. And so it's going to be really, really interesting to see kind of how the flow of all of this changes now. And I brought up the death penalty. Also, if you recall, the death penalty has officially been put on the table for Chad Daybell. They have not made this decision for Lori as of yet, and this is also going to be in the works. Next Tuesday is Lori's arraignment at 1 p.m. Fremont County. Before that arraignment will be taking place, there's going to be a separate hearing. First, the prosecution is still fighting for the damn jury to be bussed in from Ada County. They're citing an increased cost, expenses, and all of that stuff to have the court clerks, court staff, lawyers, all of that transferred out of Fremont County over to Boise. So before Lori Vallow's arraignment, there's actually going to be a quick hearing on the status of that. Unknown if we're going to get the final ruling on that, but that is a hearing that's going to take place before her arraignment. Now, at her arraignment this next Tuesday, it's going to be similar to what we've already seen previously. She's going to be read the charges officially and then asked to enter a plea. She can either say guilty or not guilty. If she says guilty, first of all, I may shit my pants. No joke. I literally may shit my pants because that would be the most unexpected move ever. I think most of us are just going to go ahead and assume and say that she's going to plead not guilty. Now, if she pleads not guilty, that means that she and Chad, they're going to be tried together because they conspired. You know, thankfully, Judge Stephen Boyce is like, nope, we need to try you together. They're likely going to be tried together in January. The trial as it stands right now is scheduled for 8 to 10 weeks for the two of them. And that's pretty much going to be all she wrote if that happens, unless something, you know, huge happens to come along and blow all of this up. If she pleads guilty, then that's going to be interesting. That's going to be a potential plea deal if there is one offered, you know, whatever. That would be fascinating. The state will then have 60 days to determine and make a decision on the death penalty if they are going to seek the death penalty for Lori Vallow. Honestly, and I'm not a petty person. I'm not a vain person. But I am fascinated. I do wonder what she's going to look like coming out here. We haven't seen her in 9 months. And I think it's more related to her headspace. Because, and this is what Brittany and I have discussed in previous episodes as well. We believe, or at least, you know, Brittany's not here to defend herself, and I'm not going to put words in her mouth, but I believe that Lori Vallow 100% did in fact believe all of the bullshit that Chad Daybell fed her. I believe that based on statements that she made to Charles Vallow, that she's made throughout her life to family, friends, to April Raymond, to other people. I believe that she really believed not only initially early in life in the LDS doctrine, but also in the more fringe stuff. Chad Daybell, Jason Mao, other authors, things like that. Don't forget, she was involved in like Thor and Zulema and all of this random, Julie Rowe, all of this random shit. Not so much Julie Rowe, but Julie Rowe was more involved with Chad Daybell. So it got me thinking earlier, how do you take someone that devout, that much of a zealot and a religious fanatic, and you put them in a mental health hospital and a facility, and you work on them? They facilitated, if not murdered, we don't know, 2 children. How do you get through to someone, and what does that breakthrough look like? What does that feel like? Being in a cloud of religious fanaticism, something happened so that her competency was restored. Does that mean that she finally realizes that Chad's bullshit is fake? Are we going to see her turn on him? Are we going to see them get divorced? Are they going to stay married? I mean, there's really zero reason for them to do either at this point. They're never going to touch each other again. But that's, I think, what's the most fascinating part about all of this to me currently is, what's Lori Vallow's current mental state? Has the mental health facility, have the therapists, the doctors, have they been able to get through to her of everything that has transpired? And if so, if that is going to affect how we now see Lori Vallow navigating this trial, her pleas, is she going to turn on Chad, blame Alex, so on and so forth. I'm just really, really so excited to see this start picking up steam here. And I'm super excited that the state has really been trying hard to keep them being tried together. You know, it's much harder to play a blame game when both are actually present in the same room in the same trial. You know, it would be much easier for Chad Daybell if their trial was split to be, you know, say, well, Lori did this. The prosecution is obviously going to have a lot of questions as well. And it's going to be much easier for Chad Daybell if Lori Vallow is in a separate courtroom, separate trial altogether. He could, you know, accuse her all day long. Same thing with Lori Vallow. If they're tried together, they can't really do that as they're sitting there being tried together. So I just think the entire dynamic of this now is just so fascinating. And I'm so excited to see how all of this ends up playing out. But we are finally here. We have made it. So I don't know, guys. That's it for the update, though. Huge, huge, huge news. I'm excited for our, you know, our cast of characters and our friends to come back. You know, what happened to Melanie Pawlowski, Melanie Gibb, all of these other people, Zulema, where are you guys? You know, Jason Mao has been off doing his speaking engagements. Julie Rowe is miming and being really freaking weird on Instagram, which is terrifying. I don't know like where her angels are, but she needs to call them and tell them to work double time because it's a hot mess. But I'm excited that the wheels of justice are in fact turning in this case. Looks like we're heading towards January unless something really crazy happens on Tuesday. So for those of you who are going to be watching on Tuesday, don't forget to titty slam that Discord link in the show notes or in the YouTube notes. And let's watch this together on Tuesday. I'll be in the chat. Some of our patrons will be on the chat. Any and all are welcome. let's watch this, guys. It's been a long time coming. Especially heartwarming was watching the interview with Kay and Larry Woodcock. Larry always almost puts me on the verge of tears, you know, saying that they still have the memories. It was just incredibly, incredibly sad. But watching and seeing how happy they were that now justice is finally continuing, that absolutely made my day. That freaking made my day. I'm so happy for them right now. One quote by Larry stood out to me. He said, at some point, she's going to have to look at us. But thanks again for listening, guys. You've been listening to We Saw the Devil. I am Robin. You can find us at We Saw the Devil everywhere. website.com. We Saw the Devil across every social media platform. And don't forget, if you're liking the show, loving the show, want to become part of the team for as little as $3 a month, you can do so at patreon.com/We Saw the Devil. Until next crime.